This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, on the job site. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy at work, just like you? Right now, times are very tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to help you through your work day. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
And you are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macra and myself, Tass.
We have Misha Ketchell, the editor of The Conversation, joining us now. I've got to say, Misha, I went to the Michelle Grattan, Sean Kelly.
As my guest, Macca.
As Tass's guest at the Church Hall in Carlton.
Great, nice.
It was fantastic. So thank you to The Conversation for, you know, putting that on. It was a really important event. Thank you. How are you, Misha?
Oh, I'm good. Thanks, Macca. I didn't see you there, actually. We should have said hello.
Oh, oh. I didn't see you there either.
Oh, well,
I sort of came in and sat at the back. So.
We did have some friends arrive a little bit late who also sat at the back, and we did mingle with them and hang out with them. And then, of course, we got caught in the rain.
The rain, yeah. I've never seen Tassie look like a drowned Greek rat.
Misha, we're very interested in your reflections on where we're at the moment. But before we kick off that conversation, what's your view about the latest little bombshell about the China ships on the west of WA?
Were they coming to get Harold Holt?
That's a good question. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say I've been listening to the program all morning.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think that you guys are doing a great job in terms of the most important thing in covering an election, which is actually hosting the debate itself, hearing from the candidates. That sort of grassroots discussion, not getting too meta. I think it's really important for the media to focus on that. And
thank you.
I did an election panel recently with The Guardian and The Age and News Corp. And it was interesting the extent to which editors and journalists are really trying to perhaps learn the lessons from 2019 and do more of this, actually drilling down to actual seats, actual candidates.
Yeah.
The decisions that voters are facing. So, look, I just want to say I thought that was terrific.
Thank you.
With the boats off the Western Australian coast, to be honest, I'm not up to speed on that. So it's probably not a question I should comment on too much.
That's all right. There's another poll which will be coming out next week. The polls are interesting. It's got Labor. This is two-party preferred at 54, the government at 46. Labor primary vote at 38, the coalition at 35. This follows the Channel 9 shit show, otherwise known as a debate. And what are your thoughts? You made a comment earlier, Misha, that it is actually about individual seats. It's almost like it's dozens and dozens of by-elections, isn't it?
Look, I think that's right. And I think, you know, we've discussed this on air before, that Australia has an obsession with polls. It was really problematic in 2019 because the polls were wrong. They were out by quite a significant margin, more than 3%. And generally speaking, I think that the media does well to avoid paying too much attention to polls and actually just focus on the process itself of looking at the individual seats. But having said that, we are 1 week out from the election. And these new polls that have been released today are very, you know, significant. And I think it is possibly a point at which we can just have a little peek at what we're seeing in terms of the overall trend. And it's very interesting because there are two polls out. There's a news poll, but there's also a YouGov poll, which is what you'd call a multi-level regression poll. And if you don't know what that means, that's okay, because I don't really either. but the thing about it is that it's a poll where they look over a period of time. It's sort of a slightly different and potentially more rigorous methodology. And it's basically predicting Labor getting 80 House seats and the Coalition 63. And, you know, that other poll that you're talking about, Macca, you know, is showing Labor ahead on two-party preferred 54, 46. So that is indicating quite strongly that there is a mood for change at this moment. These are sort of the penultimate polls we'll get. There'll be more polls probably on Friday, and that will be the final polls before the election itself.
But, Misha, the interesting thing about the polls is that everybody after the last election has been felt rather burnt about relying and trusting polls. Why should we trust these polls, and what's changed between the last election and now to make these a bit more, I suppose, valid or rigorous or something or other? What's going on?
So it depends on how cynical you are as to whether there's any reason to think these are more valid or vigorous.
Okay.
All of the pollsters after the 2019 election went away and looked at their methodology, and they've made some changes to the way they do their polls, the way that they construct representative samples, the way they target people who are hard to reach. So they claim that this reweighting, this sort of methodological changes, have increased the accuracy. Now, some people believe that, some people don't. Some people would say, well, you know, the proof's in the pudding with the polling. So I think polling should definitely be taken with a high level of scepticism. For that reason, you know, it's unsound. It's particularly unsound in individual seats. So if you're looking at a marginal, you know, even an electorate like Kooyong, for example, where there's a Teal candidate who's doing very well, if you do a particular poll, they're notoriously unreliable. However, overall, they do give us something of a sense of overall mood. And I think even if you accept, you know, that you deal with the margins of error of 3% and everything else, it does show that Labor is actually doing quite well at the moment, and that there does seem to be in the electorate overall a mood for change. And you probably can't say anything much stronger than that, but it's worth noting, I think.
I mean, this has been the message consistently now for actually more than 2 years. I do look at the polls, and I've been monitoring polls over the last couple of years. This has been a consistent message, but everybody's very anxious about calling it because of the experience that we had last time round. And, my feeling is that if the pollsters get it really wrong this time round again, well, then no one's ever going to commission a poll ever again, and that's the end of the pollsters, isn't it?
Which, in some ways, would not be a bad thing. Because the problem with these sort of polls is they change the way that we talk about politics, and they can actually influence politics in very bad ways. Political scientists that come and look at Australia say, for example, that we have an obsession with polls compared to other countries.
Yeah.
Even in, you know, countries like the US and the UK, there are fewer polls done.
Wow.
They're released less regularly, and they're less of a driver of political discussion. I don't know if you remember, you know, when Julia Gillard was Prime Minister, for example, and there were a succession of negative polls, and there were all these discussions of how many negative polls from News Poll and pushes for changes of leadership. It happened, I think, to some extent under Abbott and Turnbull as well. Like, there's this constant idea that if you're doing badly on these polls, which are actually pretty unreliable and only a moment in time, your leadership can be put under pressure, and actually plays into what happens in Canberra. So my view is it would not be a bad result if actually we talked about polls very, very rarely.
Yeah, okay.
And took it out of the discussion. But I'm just, because of the moment we're at in the end of election campaign, I'm making a little exception just to have a sneak peek at these ones, because they are quite interesting.
Michelle Grattan has written a piece, about the Prime Minister, you know, the bulldozer, I think, as he refers, or some people
that
do.
That was this morning. I enjoyed reading
and
that.
And, you know,
piece.
That he's flagging a change. do you think, you know, the Prime Minister spent a lot of time recently criticising the opposition leader for trying, you know, oh, he's got new glasses, he's got a new suit, and, you know, I'm who I am and I don't want to change. He now says he needs to change. What's going on there? So he looked at the polling too.
Well, I think that it's very clear that his personal brand is toxic, and it's particularly toxic in a number of seats that the coalition needs to win. So that's one thing, that's the motivation. I've been very interested, actually, in what a lot of the columnists have been making of these comments. And basically the argument has been, it's like somebody in an abusive relationship who, you know, at that moment when, you know, you've thrown their clothes out the window and they're down on the street, they say, I can change.
Yes.
It's like, you know, you treat somebody a certain way for a period of time and you've got to judge them on is their behaviour, and then at a point they sort of hold out this promise of something different. But even that promise of something different was somewhat mealy-mouthed, because he also said that, you know, his approach was dictated by the circumstances. Yeah. And sort of tried to justify it.
I don't know why, but I just keep on thinking of the comment, Dyson's cartoon yesterday, you know, references Macron's comments. You know, I don't think I know. And do you think what Morrison's saying here is, I don't think I can change. I know I can change. Can we believe that?
I don't know. I mean, I think that the difficulty is, I mean, this is something that somebody made a really good point, which is you come into an election campaign, and often it's as though we have to have this sort of forced amnesia. We forget everything that the candidates have done, say the government for the last 3 years, and it's suddenly, oh, blank slate, what are your policies? And it's like, well, hold it a second. We do have your behaviour for the last 3 years, and that is probably a better predictor than anything you might say now when you want us to vote for you, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a significant thing, and I think it's going to be, you know, the reality is it's going to be very hard for Morrison to sort of upend those perceptions that have grown over time.
Misha, we've got a couple of minutes.
And I have a really quick question. Yeah, I'm not going to ask you how you're going to vote, Misha, but have you decided? Yeah. How you
Have I decided? No, actually. It's really tricky for me. I'm in Peter Khalil's seat, and, you know, I am, you know, very keen to look at, you know, all of the issues and the policies that are going to get the things that, you know, matter most to me. And obviously, you know, climate change is very important, social equity, cost of living, I mean, all of those things that we talk about. So I haven't decided. I'm sort of going to make the decision. Really,
I'd never thought of you as being a swinger, possibly, Misha.
Well, I've always thought it's smarter to be a swinger.
One final question before we wind up. This is the last week of the campaign. Can we expect another bombshell?
Is there going to be a clanger dropped by either party before the end of the week? What do you reckon?
Well, it's interesting. So the coalition's about to launch its campaign, which is very sort of, you know, Kafkaesque, isn't it? Like in the last week after campaigning for 5 weeks, you say, oh, we're going to start campaigning now. It's a bit ridiculous. And obviously there will be some policy content in that. But I think most of the work is done, to be honest. I think most of it's sort of over because the pre-polling's open. It's in the interest of both the parties. You know, they have to get so much stuff out early. So, I mean, look, you know, events will always happen, but I wouldn't see them planning to drop major stuff now. There would be no point in doing that.
Mm. Well, Misha, thank you for your time. Always great to have your words of wisdom on the airwaves. Great to have a discussion.
And what we're going to do is we're going to send Sarah Jefford and Peter Khalil, because they're the only candidates we know, in Wills. We're going to send them down to your joint, you know, to try and persuade you. There you go.
Fantastic. Well, I thought they both were really good today, so
they
I'm
were.
Happy thank to you. Talk to them both. Yeah.
Thank you. Misha Ketchell, thank you. Thank you as always. Thank you for the work you do at The Conversation, another independent media outlet, one of the few.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.